I'm one of HRN's interns, Nina Medvinskaya, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week's topic? The marriage of food and danger. Sometimes, danger lurks in the food that we eat.
So instead of saying what is poisonous, I'd rather say what's not, because it's literally just the flesh and the fins.
Food poisoning doesn't just threaten our bodies, but it endangers our environment as well.
The emissions of JBS, combined with the other top five meat companies, exceed the annual emissions of Exxon, Shell, or BP.
For more, tune into this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
You're listening to Feast Meets West, the show tracing the stories behind your favorite Asian foods. I'm your host, Linda Liu. We are broadcasting live from Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Every episode, we dig deep on a dish or aspect of Asian cuisine by having a conversation with the passionate people from the world of Asian food. All right, real talk. We are much overdue for an episode on Vietnamese cuisine. Back in season one, we had the pleasure of hosting Vietnamese food authority Andrea Nguyen on the topic of pho. Tonight, we are excited to welcome Sarah Levine and Daniel Lay from Hanoi House, located in the East Village of Manhattan, as well as Kim Hong and Dennis Snow from D&D, located in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, to talk about the new wave of Vietnamese restaurants in New York City. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Thanks. Howdy. Thanks.
So these guys are killing it in the game. They are putting Vietnamese food at the forefront of New York City's best restaurant lists with their interpretations of the cuisine. Hanoi House opened in January 2017 and went on to receive accolades such as Eater New York's Editor's Choice for Chef of the Year, New York Magazine's Top Choice for Absolute Best Vietnamese Restaurant in New York, and rave reviews from the New York Times and New Yorker, among many others. So let's start with learning a bit more about the Hanoi House team. Welcome, Sarah and Daniel. Could you guys tell me a little bit more about Hanoi House, what you guys do there, and what kind of Vietnamese food you guys make?
Yeah, I'll start. So it's Vietnamese food. It's not necessarily one region over the other, but we certainly pay homage to Hanoi with some of the dishes that we've selected and really focused on. Because the restaurant came out of a love affair with that city, and we thought it was really important not only to honor it, but also to distinguish ourselves from the dozens of Vietnamese restaurants in New York that focused on Southern style, more the food of Saigon.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the cuisine styles of the North versus the South?
I think at the most simple level, there is, you know, it's driven by the climate in part, a little cooler in the north, warmer in the south. So in the north, it's less of a focus on tropical flavors, less sweet. In the south, you see sweeter, more coconut, more chili peppers. The north, a little more emphasis on black pepper as a source of the heat for the dishes, and also more influence of Chinese cuisine on noodle dishes, stir fries, and arguably pho, which is the most famous, heavily influenced by Chinese cuisine.
Yeah. And what do you guys specifically do at the restaurant?
Well, I'm the chef over there, one of the co-chefs. So there's me, myself, Daniel, and then there's a partner, Albert. You guys will probably see us. We help create the menu of what's there now and try to execute what we envision as we grew up as child's kids.
Mm-hmm.
And since we are taking it more professional now, we're trying to not really showcase, but show what we can do to what we grew up with.
Yeah,
like,
so
our
what,
vision of it.
What part of the region did you grow up in?
Well, I was born in the U.S. I grew up in Orange County, Little Saigon.
OC.
Yeah, OC, Westminster, where all the little, you know, all the Asians fled from, you know, post-war or during the war.
Right.
So I grew up in that region.
Would you say it had a northern or a southern Vietnamese influence in the OC?
It's its own thing?
It's
definitely southern. Majority of it is southern there. Anything that was related to the north, people were kind of afraid.
Mm.
So they kind of just kept in the shadows. There was a couple of, you know, restaurants that tried it, but there was so much political problems going on with that, so they kind of just shut down and then just kind of disappeared.
That's so interesting.
But, I mean, nowadays, it's popping back up again. So who knows what's going to happen in a couple of years from now.
I think Daniel mentioned recently he didn't know until, you know, in the last few years or maybe since the restaurant opened that, was it your dad was born in Hanoi or your
no,
dad's parents were born
yeah,
in Hanoi?
Yeah, so my grandparents, which is my dad's, my grandma, grandpa is my dad's, like their parents,
mm-hmm.
they're from Hanoi and they went down to the south during the war, but they were born in Hanoi and I absolutely had no idea about that until just recently this year.
Wow.
So they kind of kept it like a secret
yeah.
from, you know, pretty much anybody else as well.
Yeah, what a journey.
Definitely.
So if I can just elaborate on one thing, because I think it's important that we have a vision for the menu. It's a very small menu, but we kind of think there are three dishes that have a place there. Number one is truly authentic. Everyone's idea of what textbook is will vary, but mm-hmm. you know, it's very traditional, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably about a third of the dishes. And then you have the items that are a twist on something that is very traditional, like the uni pancakes, for instance. It's a small turmeric and coconut pancake, made with rice flour, griddled. Traditionally it would be shrimp. We serve it with a quail egg and uni, but the flavor, the texture, the technique, the way it looks are all super traditional. It's just sort of like this unexpected ingredient. And then the last third is items that are completely made up, but when paired with the other dishes in the other two categories, really make a complete and balanced meal, whether it's something super spicy, something super funky. It really is like the fills in the missing gaps so that you could just kind of order half of the menu and get an abundance of flavors where they all just work.
Yeah,
as a family style.
That's a great way to break out your menu. How fun. And what are some of your personal favorite dishes?
That is extremely hard to know.
They're all your babies?
Yes, it's too hard to pinpoint. If I had two go-tos,
mm-hmm.
I would probably say one of the noodle dishes, hu tiêu. That's probably one of my tops. It's just so light and refreshing. It doesn't make you feel bad, but...
So could you describe what that is and what ingredients you use for our listeners?
So what I grew up eating with was just pork bones. Usually it was neck or little riblets that was just braised. And then it was made into a stock, seasoned with fish sauce, some onions and ginger. And then
very fragrant.
Yeah, I don't know how everybody else grew up eating mm-hmm. it, but my grandma would blanch the shrimp inside the pork broth as well, so it gave it a little extra balance to it.
Mm.
So it's pork and shrimp.
Surf and turf.
And the noodles are unique versus other soups.
I mean, everybody eats it with... So there's the hutinos are kind of chewy. I grew up eating it with... it's a different noodle called mien. It's like a bean thread noodle, glass noodle. I don't know if the price came into play or how it was just how my grandma made it. I'm not sure.
So what does that look like?
The mean?
Yeah.
It's like
thin angel hair.
Thin angel hair.
Even
okay.
Thinner than angel hair. It's like.
And so, almost translucent.
Yeah. It's
yeah.
It's clear. It looks like, I mean, it looks like glass and it's, I would say, I mean.
That already sounds like delicious and beautiful at the same time. I kind of feel like with Vietnamese noodles, there are also so many various types that don't get like called out enough. And it's cool to hear you talk about how like different they could be.
So I interviewed both Daniel and Albert, just sort of getting to know them when they took over as the chefs. And when I asked, what is your favorite Vietnamese dish? They both said the same thing. They both said bún riêu. Bunryu is a crab and tomato soup. And the noodle, the bun noodle, is the typical round rice vermicelli. But it's a pretty funky, crabby base to it. And it has these fun sort of like floating cakes where they whip the crab and pork and egg. And they float on top like dumplings. But that's a beloved soup that is very, very difficult to find in Vietnamese restaurants.
Yeah. Is Albert also from the OC?
He's from New York City.
Oh, okay.
So we're two different spectrums.
Yeah, but like connected with that bond of the favorite dish, that's a great beginning point.
Definitely.
Sarah, what's your favorite dish on the menu?
My favorite dish on the menu? Well, I mean, I eat the five times a week, so we'll say that's number one.
And how do you guys make yours?
It's very traditional what we do. We use oxtail neck and marrow bones, and they get cooked for about 12 hours.
Wow.
Just the blanched bones, fresh water, cooked for 12 hours, and then it gets seasoned and goes for another 4 hours. The seasoning can't tell you everything, but
yes.
Something for sweetness, something for saltiness, definitely some fish sauce in there, and then the aromatics, so the ginger and the onions, that are charred and caramelized before they go in, and then the spices. So I think, you know, it is a limited number of ingredients, and I'm sure Dennis's recipe is almost exactly the same, probably two different spices,
mm-hmm.
and two different techniques and the timing, and all of a sudden you end up with a different soup. So
would you say it's true to what you had in Hanoi, or it's your own spin on it?
I mean, in my experience, the biggest difference is the richness of it, because we're no doubt using beef that's fattier,
mm-hmm.
and you know we do skim a majority of the fat out of it. You just want those perfect little droplets on top, but for the most part, it's a super super lean broth. But then there are all these options for adding it back in. The beef fat on the side, the roasted bone marrow, the oxtail that we use to make the soup, we pick that meat and then you can add it. If you do any one of those, or if you do all three of them, you end up with a completely different soup than what you would find in a little stall in Hanoi. But the accompaniments and the absence of the hoisin and bean sprouts and Thai basil, that is true to Hanoi. I think the flavor, the richness of it is really the biggest difference.
Got it. And Daniel, could you speak to more about how you come up with the dishes for the menu? What's your inspiration point?
I mean, my biggest inspiration point is if I'm craving it and I can't find it, I'm going to make it. And
then, so it's a bit nostalgic from...
It is.
Okay.
I just turned 30, so it's a good 20 years of just, you know, listening or... trying to remember what my grandma made back in the day, because I've moved out almost half my life already.
Yeah.
So I haven't had like a home-cooked meal in I don't know how long. But when I crave it and I can't have it, that's where I get inspired, where I want to make it. And if I can nail it down to where it'll satisfy me, then I can share it with everybody else.
Yeah, that's a good North Star. All right, so Kim and Dennis. A little bit first about D&D. They actually just opened, is it this May?
This May.
Yeah, wow. And they've been racking it in as well. They were included in Infatuation New York's Best New Restaurants list, nominated for Eater New York's Restaurant of the Year and Chef of the Year, and won the Critics' Choice for Design of the Year. So amazing work all around.
Thank you.
So please tell us about D&D and what roles you guys play at the restaurant and the type of Vietnamese food you guys serve.
So I'm Kim, and I'm the co-owner and operator of D&D. I want to say that, you know, this is a very Vietnamese-American approach to Vietnamese food. So, you know, we...
All three co-owners are first generation.
So,
yeah.
So really the inspiration behind this was ultimately, I think we wanted to, you know, get the team back together. Our other partner, Tuan, my husband, owns and operates Anchoy, and he runs the front of house. And Dennis was the opening chef back in 2009. And I think...
A decade ago.
Yes. almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
And I think they're both very green in managing their respective roles. And I think we wanted to reunite and really take this Vietnamese American dream to the next level mm-hmm. by, creating a new concept with a larger space, bigger kitchen capabilities, more knowledge, and also this fantastic community and group of supporters.
Yeah, you already built up a fan base that wanted more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody loves a redemption story. So, it was really fitting. I was out of a professional kitchen cooking service for a while, and I was doing a lot of catering and offsite catering. And while it's fun and challenging, it flexes a different part of your muscle. Mm-hmm. And I really missed and craved working in a home-based kitchen again. And I really missed the camaraderie of working with the team throughout the day, mm-hmm. Really being behind the lines and just like figuring things out. So
there's also such a synergistic energy when it's like a full house that you just can't beat.
Yeah.
It's really, I think Wiley Dufresne said it, it's the ultimate team sport. I was never a very athletic child. I never got on any of the basketball teams. And
I can't imagine.
Yeah. So this is like the first time like I really truly am playing a sport.
You're
and
head
it's,
chef.
Yeah,
all right.
And it's like
you're captain.
And he's the coach.
Yeah.
Oh,
a player.
I realized that today as well. I am the coach and the quarterback of this team. In the kitchen. So, like, you have to play,
no
like,
pressure.
This dual role. I mean, there really isn't any pressure, but, like, you have to play kind of this dual role with everybody. But, yeah.
And could you tell us how D&D is different from On Choi?
So, I think the awareness around Vietnamese food back in 2009 wasn't as big as today. You know, banh mi at the time was just kind of gaining its popularity. So I think An Choi kind of, is a good intro to Vietnamese food. It mm-hmm. kind of serves its classics like the pho, the banh mi's.
Yeah, the noodles and the sandwiches that was like accessible that people could translate into like, oh.
It's Vietnamese 101.
Mm-hmm.
But I think D&D is opening kind of in a different landscape. There's more Vietnamese restaurants on the market. And I think also Vietnam has become such a tourist destination. And all of this kind of plays in, like, bringing more awareness to the culture, more awareness to the cuisine. So I think in opening D&D this time, you know, we're able to be more ambitious with our concept.
Right. So it's not just pho and banh mi. What does your menu look like?
Well, we really wanted to make sure that when we opened, we really kind of stood behind something to, kind of separate ourselves and really try to specialize in something. I think what Kim was saying is that very accurate about Vietnamese 101 when we opened An Choi 9 years ago. And just the awareness of Vietnamese culture and its food, and just the, New York diners are very educated. Mm-hmm. They're so like, I think the opportunity now is they're willing to try all these weird things that we're trying to do at D&D, even though we're offering very traditional things at the same time. But yes, so to answer your question, we really wanted to concentrate on the soups.
Mm-hmm.
One of the benefits of this space and why I was excited to start this project was we just have much more infrastructure than I've ever had access to. And just to have the space and the cooking capability, it really allowed us, myself and my team, to have no limitations on one of the things we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
We have a grill. We have a unit that can cook a lot of soup at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then lifting that restriction that, we've always had working in New York City kitchens just allowed us to be, just explore the entire breadth of Vietnamese cuisine. So right now we really concentrate on a lot of soups. We feel really proud about our soup selection. And then we concentrate on a lot of lesser known popular Vietnamese things that we, Kim and I, and I'm sure Daniel and Sarah have grown up eating in all of our respective hometowns.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of those favorites?
They probably weren't available in Elmira, New York. Just putting that out there.
Our bentang noong is really cool. It's a grilled rice paper. I'm very impressed with how we're able to use rice paper in so many different ways at our restaurant.
Yes, it's such a humble ingredient.
Yeah, it's really amazing the miles we've gotten out of just simple rice paper. But yeah, it's just grilled rice paper that makes it super crispy. And it's like it looks like a pizza, so we call it a pizza.
Yeah, but, and that's something, that format is something you would see in Vietnam?
For sure, yeah. Okay. That's like a street snack that kids are eating after they go watch a movie or after they're done with school. You don't really see it in a restaurant so much, but...
it's so tasty. I had it.
It reminds me of a Jack in the Box taco. And, I grew up eating those Jack in the Box tacos. It just has that fatty, crunchy... Yeah. It's super
tasty.
But
light.
But very light at the same time. It's rice paper.
Rice paper.
Yeah, so like...
It's practically not, zero calories. Depends on what you put on it, right?
Practically zero.
It's funny because you brand it as Vietnamese pizza and you're next to like Pauly G's, also a pizza shop.
Right.
I don't know.
It's... The inevitable collabo between D&D and Pauly G's
will
probably happen at some point if he'll allow it.
So how do you come up with your dishes? Like, when do you decide to put something on your menu or you feel like it's ready for the New York audience?
Yeah, we actually just updated our menu. I'm super proud of our team. You know, we've only been open, I think, 7 months, and we just flipped the menu about 60%, which was a fun challenge. A lot of the dishes, I think what Daniel said, a lot of it's necessity. I just want to eat something that I grew up eating and no one's going to make it. So we need to make it ourselves. We just put a dish on. It's a ben bo chien. It's a fried like rice cake. And I used to eat it. There's a restaurant in Houston where I'm from and Kim's from.
Tan Tan's.
Yeah, shout out to Tan Tan. every table has this dish. And this is an omelet with some rice cakes.
Mm-hmm. I've probably eaten hundreds of these.
Yeah.
Yeah, and are these rice cakes like the round ones in Korean cuisine or different
like
shape?
Doughy.
It's like taro almost.
No, it's not. It's crispy on the outside, and it should taste like melted cheese on the inside. So it's kind of like a Vietnamese tater tot.
Yes, excellent.
But I didn't want to buy it. I know they sell like taro cakes, and we bought some just to try out. But necessity made me have to figure out this dish. And we figured it out. You know, shout out to Caroline. She figured out the rice cakes. We've been working on that for months. And then she came in and figured it out in like a couple weeks.
I'm so happy this dish is on the menu.
Yeah. And it's just like nostalgia. So a lot of the things like that are on the menu, it's just nostalgia. Like I wanted to eat this. No one else is making it the way I want to eat it and the way I prefer. So we just have to do it ourselves.
When does brunch start, Dennis?
When does brunch start?
It sounds that like is, a brunch dish.
Excellent this, question, Sarah.
Brunch is coming soon.
Okay.
Also in terms of inspiration, I'm gonna let a little secret out. Watching YouTube and watching YouTube cooking videos on Vietnamese food.
Okay.
Shout out to Helen's Recipes. It is a very interesting cooking show run by this woman in Vietnam.
Her voice is also
from
so
Vietnam.
Calming.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
very soft and sweet.
My typical night when I get home from work to decompress is to sit down and watch Helen's Recipes.
With Helen. Yes.
And just unwind and watch her make food.
Oh, and amazing.
She'll inevitably cook something because in Vietnam, they're always making all these crazy things that I've never heard of. And then it'll be like, oh, that's a good idea.
So Helen keeps you up to speed.
Helen keeps me up. Yeah.
Shout outs to Helen.
Yeah, shout out to Helen. So, YouTube and necessity.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. We're going to take a really quick break and we'll be right back with more Feast Meets West.
Next year, Heritage Radio Network is turning 10. For the last decade, we've been committed to bringing listeners around the world the very best in food radio, for free. Our small staff and incredible network of hosts work hard so that listeners can tune in each week to hear the important conversations in food policy, stay on the cutting edge of cocktail culture, and hear the latest updates in food tech. But there is no HRN without the support of listeners like you. Become a member of Heritage Radio Network today and help HRN get a strong start to our second decade. Choose from exclusive member gifts and stay in the loop on discounts to upcoming events. There's no better time to show your support. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and wish HRN a happy birthday.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and their rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit Korin.com.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Feast Meets West. So we talked a little bit about the OC, Vietnamese food scene. Kim and Dennis, where are you guys from, and what's the Vietnamese food scene like there?
Go ahead.
We're from Houston, Texas.
Oh, H-Town.
Shout out to H-Town.
Yeah. I'm from Sugar Land.
I'm from Pearland.
Yeah, so two separate areas.
Okay. And so was the scene different even in those two areas?
No, I
would
say
Or there some general trends?
It's kind of concentrated in one area, which is Bel Air.
Yeah.
Was it more northern or southern?
Definitely southern. But there are definitely restaurants in there that cater to the central region. I don't know if there's I've ever been to a northern restaurant. I don't think I'd even know.
I would say largely southern because... Yeah.
Just of the immigration pattern?
Exactly. Yeah. There were not many, I guess, northern immigrants of Vietnamese after the war.
I mean, so. I just want to jump in. Kim and Tuan are not the only ones from Houston. My mom's from Houston as well.
Oh, what's up?
And she actually works in Bel Air, so I'm kind of...
Oh, get out of here.
I know that area a little
so
bit.
So you can represent
so,
to that, too.
Yeah, they're pretty spot on with more of the southern food. I mean, there is a touch of the Viet Cajun in there as well.
Viet Cajun.
So yeah. I don't know how long, if they've been back there recently, but mm-hmm. it's starting to come around a little bit in Bel Air as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Would you say the biggest difference, what are the differences between the OC and Houston? Is it Texas having that Cajun flair?
I mean, I don't know if they've been to OC as often or not. I spent almost every summer in Houston from, I'd say, 6 to maybe 15.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do you think?
I don't think there is a big difference.
Oh, okay.
They're very similar to each other. I would say, if anything, it's just seasoning-wise. One is more spicier and heavier than the other, and one's more lighter.
Okay. And then how do you compare? So which one do you think is more heavily seasoned?
Houston is more spiced, and Orange County is more seasoned, but... They're both very comparable.
Ways.
It's really hard to tell. If you put two bowls next to each other or just two dishes of the same thing, it's very hard to tell the difference.
Yeah. And then how do you compare those Vietnamese food scenes with what we have here in New York? Does it kind of pale in comparison here in New York?
Yeah, because I would say that there is not a very large Vietnamese community in New York City.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
Yeah, when you have a large... population of Vietnamese people, you can get a lot of restaurants that are specializing in certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, you hope at some point down the road, and I think where we'd like to see things happen is restaurateurs starting to specialize in certain things for Vietnamese food. And I think what you'll see in Houston and the OC specifically is lots of regional specialties, and that's the restaurants completely dedicated to that. They'll specialize in just that soup. or they'll specialize in one central region and just make certain dumplings and that's it.
Yeah, which is also common in Vietnam. Like you'll go to a stall and this is like the only thing that they make.
I think part of that is because it's what the family grew up doing. It's what they know how to do best. So that you're sticking to their roots. They're afraid to branch out and try something new. So they're doing what they know best. It's similar to what like me and Dennis are doing. We know how to cook food, so that's what we're doing best. Is we're cooking Vietnamese food to the best potential possible.
Is there a Viet Cajun in Orange County?
Unless you call boiling crab Viet Cajun.
I see an opportunity.
Yeah.
And why do you guys think that the new wave of Vietnamese restaurants have opened here in New York in just the last few years? You guys are doing like tremendous things alongside other, you know, folks like Madame Vo, and there is a crew. But it has really been only in the last like few years.
Yeah, I think the first wave of Vietnamese restaurants belonged to like the immigrant community, really serving the immigrant community. So I think it's happening right now is because we, as the first generation children of this immigrant community, is coming of age and kind of, you know, creating something that is representative of our generation.
That makes sense. Yeah. Also, I guess you guys are putting a creative flair on the cooking too.
I mean, I wouldn't call it flair. I would probably call it more technique to what...
The flavors are there, but I think the technique is more modern.
It's technique. Yeah, it's more modern. Okay. It's bringing out, it's showcasing more of the ingredients and the flavor that's being offered instead of just what our parents would, like, I see my grandma at home, she would just smash a bunch of stuff and throw it in. It's more than just smashing stuff and throwing it in. Now we're looking at, you know...
You put the precision into that.
Yeah, precision. We're taking our time instead of just rushing everything just to get our family fed or, you know, the customers fed, as you would say.
Yep. You can put some uni on top of that. And what does it take to open up a successful Vietnamese restaurant in this day and age for New Yorkers? What demands do you guys feel like you're meeting? It is a competitive restaurant landscape.
I think you have to be insane, first of all, to open up a restaurant.
So kudos to all y'all.
Yeah, you just have to, I don't know, not listen to anybody else, have no reason, just have to really, really want to do it and love it. Because it's probably the worst idea if you don't.
Keep going.
Yeah, so, it's, I don't know, it's really challenging. You know, dealing with landlord issues, permitting issues, staffing is a challenge, rising labor costs, rising food costs, the perception of what our food should be valued at, and what somebody will pay is challenging.
It sounds like, you know, you guys are the people that are ready to stand up to those challenges, and it's time to change some of that perception.
I mean, I feel like most people's first experience with pho is probably like homemade pho, like their mom's pho, or
they got it at the strip mall. It was $6 or something.
For sure. And it's, there's probably like a grandma in the corner picking herbs, and there's like a 6-year-old child manning the register.
You're really painting a picture.
But it really is a disservice to the time and labor.
Yeah, what, like 12 hours for the broth?
Right. So a bowl of pho will take 18 hours to make and cost $15. But you know what else costs $15? Avocado toast.
And what about the availability of ingredients? Are you getting what you need here from your purveyors?
To the most part, fresh produce, they have it. But when you're looking at stuff that, let's say, if you want to make your own noodles in-house or you want fresh noodles, it's almost nearly impossible to find in the city just because of the lack of demand, so there's no supply for it.
I have tried to convince the Chinese like manufacturers like Ho Fun noodles.
It's
pretty close. Get a little thinner for me, please.
Together,
and you can make a little bit of money here. Somebody will take.
I would
fresh
say
rice
in a couple
noodles.
Of years, they would probably be like, "Hey, this is Vietnamese is starting to come out now." So.
Yeah,
they want to make money. We want to show Vietnamese food.
Next idea, Kim.
Yeah, even between like Anchoy and Dyandi, have you guys seen a change in the accessibility to like ingredients?
I don't know. I think it's still pretty similar to what I could get when I was working at Anchoy in downtown. There's still only like two Vietnamese supermarkets in Chinatown. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody has everything that I need all the time.
Yeah. Do you guys ever like fight over stuff or do things ever run out?
I don't know. I mean, I think our menus aren't that similar. So, yeah.
Well, I remember a time when I was running around trying to find betel leaf all the time.
Oh, yeah. Good luck with that.
Herbs are very difficult to source. Mm-hmm.
So it's more the veggie stuff.
Yeah, well, for me, it's the herbs. And then I got really lucky, and somebody from Pot Pot gave me the name of the lady that supplies their herbs. And she is amazing. And she delivers the best herbs all the time, except for the last couple of weeks. But it's becoming winter.
She delivers the best herbs.
But the herbs are amazing. And that solved such a big problem because for the longest time, I couldn't find a lot of these crazy herbs.
The herbs make the dish.
Yeah, and Vietnamese food is really about
herbs. Herbs
and that freshness and that green. And without like really good herbs on a consistent basis, the food suffers.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, what is crucial to a Vietnamese dish, if listeners want to start cooking Vietnamese dishes at home, what are some key ingredients or like kind of three key staples you must have in a Vietnamese pantry?
Nook mắm for one, for sure. Fish sauce. You can't.
Yes.
You gotta have fish sauce.
Is there a particular brand that you like?
I mean, everybody grew up with Three Crabs. Everybody's familiar with it. The only thing about it, it's really high in sugar. Mm-hmm. So it's... If you're trying to watch your diet, it's not your way to go. I mean, there's other pure ones out there like Red Boat or even Sun's Fish. They're more pure, less sugar, more natural. Mm. But... fish sauce is probably the number one ingredient, I would say.
I second that. And I think jasmine rice.
Jasmine rice. Okay. Yeah. So that particularly type of long grain rice.
Yeah. No Uncle Ben's or anything like that. What would be the third one?
I think herbs.
Yeah.
Herbs and vegetables.
The Vietnamese herbs. Pick up Andrea Nguyen's book. I'm really jealous that she was here. I did not realize that she was here. She's the godmother of Vietnamese cookbooks in America.
Yeah, and like history and like how it's journeyed.
Yeah, I mean, kitchen reference that book all the time.
We have it on our shelf.
Yeah, we have it on our shelf, so I'm really jealous.
Awesome.
I want to say, if Andrea's the godmother, then Charles Fan is the godfather, right?
Exactly. Absolutely.
And also, I think often... they don't get a lot of credit, but Ed and Leanne at Bricolage worked for Charles Fan for a long time. Mm-hmm. And they opened after Anchoy, but they opened before Hanoi House and Dyandi. And their restaurant's amazing. And they're awesome people and awesome chefs. And I want them to get some attention, too, because they deserve it.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, Chef Lynn was on the show earlier this season talking about her experiences as a... female cooking Asian food. And yeah, it was great to hear her side of the story. And the fact that she was saying how growing up, she thought she always just was eating Chinese food. And then she got invited to her friend's house and she was like, wait, my Chinese food is not your Chinese food. My Chinese food's actually Chinese Vietnamese. And that kind of just like blew her mind, but it's like what she's cooking now in her kitchen, so that's great. Everyone has their own interpretation.
For sure.
So I think we didn't necessarily answer this question earlier, but how do you guys stay in command of the New York market? Is it switching up the menu frequently? Is it the social media? Is it finding that sweet spot for the value for your customers?
I think it's actually more than just serving good food. I think it's like creating, like New Yorkers treat dining as an experience. So you have to really, make it an occasion, and you do this by, you know, giving it good service, really thoughtful wine and cocktails, like a festive atmosphere, because dining out in New York is an experience.
Yeah. And Sarah, you were saying to me in an earlier conversation that you have a lot of like regulars that grew up with Vietnamese food, but they like to see some reinterpretations or like showstoppers at your restaurant or something with like a luxury component.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at our Vietnamese diners, there are some casual regular diners, but what we've noticed is a trend in it being more of a celebratory or a special occasion experience. Mm. Because this is food that has been cooked at home or can still be cooked at home or can be found in a smaller market or a different setting, it serves a special purpose. So we tend to have larger parties of Vietnamese diners and usually celebrating something. And then the non-Vietnamese diners, I think, are just back to what Kim said about value, and we spoke about this earlier as well. Value is, the food is absolutely plays a part, and the price tag is just one little part of the value, right? Because those regulars, no matter where they're from, the recognition that they get when they come in and the feeling and the you know, looking for people that they know and having an open kitchen and being able to see the chef and the chef actually remembers your name. And those are really, really important contributors to that value and the experience that you're getting.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So for all of you guys, where would you like to see the cuisine go in the next few years?
You know, I think it goes back to, you know, I'd like to see, and hopefully we get to do this, but specialization in certain things. Mm-hmm. You know, the dream would be to open something that just specializes and maybe in Boonbao way, and that's it. And that's all you serve, and you sell 100 bowls a day.
It's like perfecting your craft.
That's funny because a couple of months ago, I was craving Boonbao way, and you cannot find a good bowl in the city or anywhere.
Yeah.
You know what? And that's what leads to my inspiration, just to make my own. And having someone specialize in just that, people like me or even Dennis or just anybody out there that's craving it, they can just go and get it and just be happy about it.
Yeah, I think that's really where you're going to get like just the most delicious thing, when somebody can just dedicate resources and time to
that's
it.
That's right.
And there's just, you know, there's so many Vietnamese soups and there's so many of these dishes that require so much labor. But that'd be kind of cool. I'd like to see, I hope to see, like, I think Madame Vo started doing that with the barbecue stuff. I think that's a really great idea. You know, there is a tradition of Vietnamese people grilling meats. I did it at home all the time with my parents growing up. So I think that's a pretty cool step in that direction. I think you're going to start seeing more and more of that, as opposed to a place that serves banh mi, pho, and like just kind of all these dishes that people are very familiar with.
Yeah, that's great. So the education to show like the color and variety of the cuisine.
Yeah.
And what's next for your guys' restaurants? I know it's still like fairly new for everyone, but do you guys already have like new concepts cooking up or other projects you're working on?
I want to say something easier to open and less front of house staff.
Okay.
We love the front of house.
Yeah,
don't take that.
Yeah, don't take that the wrong way.
Yeah, don't take that the wrong way. But you know, something a little bit less to manage in terms of just like the human capital of this is very significant, and something that I don't know. They're like specializing in something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still think there could be a really good banh mi shop here.
Sounds like you guys want to bring like a Vietnam stall to New York City type of thing, where it's one person running everything.
You know, that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Would that be Dennis?
I don't know.
I predict that happening very soon. And this meeting
this
might
kind
have
of
something to do with
too,
it.
Yeah.
We need a good banh mi. We need someone to make
really
good bread.
It's true.
It's always about the bread. And
right now we use at Anchai like a hoagie. So you know, going back to Houston, it's kind of like, if you have good bread, whatever else is in it, it barely even matters.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead.
No,
nothing. No, I was going to say about the bread, I mean, back home in Orange County, shout outs to Budmi Jia Kelly. They make their breads in-house fresh daily.
Yeah. Mm.
You can get a Budmi for $2.50 and you will be satisfied with it.
And that's what they do. That's their specialty.
All day long.
Yeah, you can taste the difference.
So Hanoi House is opening a soup shop.
Oh.
It is designed just for takeout and delivery.
Mm-hmm.
It will have a few dine-in seats. If you've ever been to the restaurant, you can imagine if you stripped away all of the dining room seating and you were just left with 10 seats, a counter, and a kitchen, that's what we have. So we're just trying, the things that we don't have because of space limitations, we would like to offer, which is just simply takeout, delivery, and lunch.
Yeah.
So that will be hopefully by February 1st.
Is that an exclusive drop?
She asked the question. I didn't know it was
coming.
You heard
it here first.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
That's the most immediate thing that's happening. However,
that's big. That's huge, though.
You know, there's no denying what these guys have said that, you know, I hear over and over again of what's missing in this cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
And it continually has to do with the quality of the foundation of these dishes is the noodles. It's bun, right? It's the noodles, how they're cut, it's the bread, whatever it may be. The foundation is limited, and that's going to grow, and that's going to open up the possibilities for these very specialized dishes to grow with it. I think that's what's going to happen, and that's what we want to do because, you know, we can't ignore it.
Yeah, and where's your shop going to be?
It is two doors down from our current
restaurant. Convenient, okay.
Yeah. So Daniel and Albert will be running the kitchen in both places.
Oh, amazing.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Come say hi.
Oh, we will. All right. So before we wrap up the show, we're going to shoot off some quick fire questions. This is a fun part. Okay. And it's meant to be fast. So just shout out what comes to mind first.
Uh-oh.
All right. When eating out, what neighborhood do you end up in the most?
East Village.
East Village.
Williamsburg, because I live there.
I think lately it's Bushwick.
Makes sense. What's your favorite restaurant in New York City right now?
Uncle Boone's.
Hmm.
It's kind of weird, but my go-to would be Shake Shack. That's partially because I'm missing In-N-Out back home.
That's not weird. That's delicious.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I don't know. Lately it's Polly G's Slice Shop. I'm eating pizza there a lot.
You know what? I had this a couple of days in a row. I had sandwiches at Lilia's Takeout.
Oh, I didn't know they had a takeout.
They just do coffee and sandwiches, and I'm working down their menu.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah,
good to know. Good tips, guys. What's the best thing you ate recently? Like this week? It can be out at a restaurant. Or it can be at your restaurant. It can be something you made at home.
Okay, so we just launched our new like fall winter menu at D&D. And my new favorite dish there is the gunyip.
Oh.
Oh, what is that?
It's bun hai, which is woven vermicelli with tempered.
And with the fancy noodles.
Yes. With tempered enoki mushrooms, there's like pickles and all the herbs that we speak of. And it's wrapped in this mustard green leaf, and it's tied up with a stem of chive, and it's beautiful, like a little present.
Oh, cute. So it's a roll?
It's a roll.
Okay.
And then you dip it in this like spicy sesame sauce with coconut milk, and it's so fresh, and you want to eat all the sauce.
So many flavors. Yeah. Again, with the herbs.
Always the herbs, yeah.
Daniel made pork ribs that were unbelievable. I think they're going to go on the menu.
So amazing. I was just about to say that
because
Kim was saying back to the restaurant. We did recently a special for the restaurant was tikkal, which is traditionally braised with fish sauce. It's like a fish sauce caramel and coconut. I grew up with coconut soda, Coco Rico. I mean, I don't know.
Tikkal is probably like my last dish, if I ever have a last dish in this life.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. With rice.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought my family was the only one that used Coco Rico.
No, man.
I was always embarrassed that.
We actually served a special last week that was made with Coco Rico.
All right.
All right. Got to get myself some Coco Rico stuff. All that sounds really delicious. Okay, if you didn't pursue your passion for food or hospitality, what do you think you would be doing now instead?
I would be a psychologist.
Ooh.
I'm a huge tech nerd. I'm also a huge grease monkey. So anything with cars, anything with technology, I mean, I can do it.
I get it.
I went to school for
it. Gas, fire, cooking, tech.
I went to school for it, but you know, I decided I wanted to keep it as a hobby, so most likely that.
I cringe to think about what I would be doing if I wasn't doing this. I was a mid-career switcher, along like him.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
what were you guys doing?
I was a management information systems consultant.
That's a lot
of
work.
For a consulting company for a long time.
Wow.
And, yeah, I'm very happy doing what I do now.
Congrats.
There's no chance I would ever go back to doing anything else.
Wow.
I also begrudgingly would probably continue in the merchandising and buying, you know, career.
In fashion and retail?
Yes, in retail.
Yeah. So for the two of you guys, what was the driving point? How did you know it was, like, the right decision to switch mid-career?
You know, I worked a lot of hostessing positions when I was in college.
All right, so you had a little taste?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I thought I wanted to become a buyer, and I did that for 8 years. And then I quit because I was very unhappy and unfulfilled. It was, like, not a creative job. It was, like, a numbers job. And I think this job is both the perfect balance of, like, creativity and also numbers for me. Yeah.
You just know when it's not working out, and it wasn't working out. So I knew I had to do something different. I don't know why I picked cooking, to be honest. It's not like I grew up in a household that my mom, while she did cook, but, you know, it was like she was a working, you know, my mom was working. So, like, it was a lot of canned spaghetti or something. So I don't know how I ended up gravitating toward this. I like work with my hands.
Self-satisfying.
Probably because you didn't want canned spaghetti.
Yeah.
And you were craving the food.
Yeah, and I think I was craving the food. And living in New York at the time, there weren't many options. So I'm very grateful that however I ended up in this path, that I ended up doing this.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
No more Chef Boyardee's.
No more. None of that. It was...
it's nostalgic.
Man, SpaghettiOs?
No. What is the canned ragu? Is it something like... I don't know. Some canned tomato sauce. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chef Boyardee.
And Sarah, you were in hospitality for quite a while, right?
Yeah, I'm just listening to them, and I'm thinking that their decision to turn into the restaurant business is like my decision to turn into Vietnamese cuisine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how did you decide?
I've
what was the I know you and your partner, fiance, went on a world tour. How did you figure out it was Vietnamese cuisine was the one that you guys were going to start a restaurant against?
I mean, as soon as I was out of college, I knew I was in the restaurant business. And, you know, you do that. I worked for someone who was a genius, and I learned a ton, and I felt very ready to take that leap. But when we decided to go away, we weren't sure if that was it, if we would be coming back, if we would be living in New York. We had no idea. We did come back to New York, and, you know, anyone who's traveled internationally, you know that food is such a huge part of what you experience, and it definitely, as food people, it really dictated our journey and our memories and our photos. But, I mean, we went to over 50 cities, and Hanoi was a city that we couldn't stop thinking about. You know, we're back in New York. We went back to our jobs, more or less, and decided we're going to open a restaurant. We're going to start saving. We didn't know where that was going to lead us. But the only thing we wanted to eat out was Vietnamese food, and that's how we discovered An Choi and Bricolage Collage and Bunker and all the Chinatown places. And it was just in pursuit of this thing that we missed so much. And then so, you know, when we found the little place in the East Village, it was just like... it clicked. Like, this has to be it.
What a cool story. All right, the last question I have is, what's something on your wish list for Santa this holiday season?
I mean, Santa's already given me his gift.
More burners.
Yeah. we're going to go on vacation in the new year, and that's, I'm very looking. We're going back to Vietnam to
all
see.
All of us as a team.
Oh,
shout
cool.
out to Gerald. He's getting married in Vietnam. We're all going to Vietnam. So
can
we're going to
close. Team? Yeah. So,
where do we all sign up?
Yeah.
Yes, we're going to be there. We're closing actually for a week, and we're just
over
so
the holidays.
Exclusive drop.
Yeah. All this VIP information.
Yeah, we're closed the first week. And then we'll be in Vietnam, and I think that's going to be the best
Christmas gift.
What
part of Vietnam?
Just Saigon.
Yeah, Saigon.
For me,
For me, we're going to do Saigon, and then check out Hoi An. Oh. Yeah.
All right, what are you guys wishing for?
I want a new winter jacket.
So realistic, yeah. Sarah.
Realistic, yeah. I'm very simple. I don't really like to ask for much. I prefer to please people than to ask for anything in return.
There's a gadget or a game that you
well,
want.
Maybe,
there's
got to
be a kitchen
Pops.
Toy.
Maybe Funko Pops. I started that obsession lately, but...
What's that?
Little bobblehead figurine toys. Yeah, it's weird stuff to keep me busy away from the restaurant, you know?
Yes.
And as a customer, I'm like, more dishes on your menu, please. All right, thanks for all the answers. That wraps up our show. It was a pleasure having you guys all on, Sarah, Daniel, Kim, and Dennis.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you, Linda.
As we are reaching the end of the year and it's that time for reflection and giving, I wanted to take this opportunity to also thank you, dear listeners, for your support. If you are a fan of Feast Meets West or any of the 30-plus shows on Heritage Radio Network, I would like to invite you to join me in supporting the work Heritage Radio does by becoming a member. Heritage Radio is a nonprofit organization committed to giving listeners free access to shows about the food community and food industry. As an HRN insider, I know that every dollar is deeply felt and appreciated. Please head to heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Your contribution is tax deductible. So this was the last episode of the season. We will be back in the new year with many more awesome conversations from the world of Asian food. Please cherish and celebrate this time with your loved ones. Have a happy holiday season and a happy new year.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.